Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
Good morning, and before I get to my special guest in studio, I need to and want to offer a quick update for you. Here's the update about what I'm talking about, which is that terrible fire that happened in West Chicago in early January, a suburb of Chicago. But what I've learned is this is really common. This happens several times all over the country where dogs and cats can die in kennel fires. In Chicago, it was 31, I believe, dogs who perished. Just awful, and I thought, this can't keep happening. Again, this is not, by any means, only a Chicago issue. It's because the dogs are in kennels, and to my knowledge, as well-trained as they may be, they don't call emergency responders at 911. So I thought, we've got to do something about this. So I called Mark Ayers, the Illinois director of the Humane Society of the United States, who agreed with me and worked diligently to create a bill. Diane Pappas is supporting that bill. And here's what the bill says, that dogs from here on out, or cats, any animal kenneled at a facility will have to, that facility, have to have a fire alarm that rings directly to emergency responders, which now is no big deal, incidentally, or sprinkler systems, or just a human being there 24/7 to call. I mean, this kind of thing, happily, does not happen at children's daycare centers, because that choice I just gave, they have all those things by law. And also, children can run out a door if something happens. The dogs can't, because they're in kennels. So this needs to change. I need your help. Contact your Illinois state legislator, your state representative, or your state senator for support if you agree with this. This Wednesday, I believe it is going to be at committee and hopefully pass through committee with your help. And then we go on from there to the Senate. So please do help. Because this bill will save lives in Illinois, but what I'm interested in is more than that, because I know that other states pick up on what other states do. So my hope is then Indiana, Michigan, and you know what? I've been writing about this, and now I've heard from people. I heard from someone in Massachusetts this week, for example. So other states are interested in doing this, but they want to see what happens in Illinois. Please help make that happen. Contact your state rep or your state senator. Last night, I was at, with my wife, Robin, one of the best events that we've ever been at, actually. It was just wonderful, and it was for the Jane Goodall Institute. It was a fundraiser, and Carlos Drews, the executive director of the Jane Goodall Institute, is right here. Carlos, yesterday afternoon, I had the opportunity to once again interview Jane Goodall, and people ask me, I used to do entertainment reporting 500 years ago, and I wrote for People Magazine and USA Today, all the big stars, because at that time, they don't anymore, but at that time, they used to do junkets, and they would go city to city to promote a movie or something, and I got to talk to them all, but people, and then everyone in the pet world, just because of the platforms I have the opportunity to talk to anyone, veterinarians from around the world who are the best at what they do. Here's why I bring that up. People ask me my favorite interview. That's a question people ask when they interview me. And I always say, without doubt, without hesitation, it's Jane Goodall. Nobody like her. So here's where I begin, Carlos. What do you think it is about this woman that resonates with people? If you've never heard her speak, you may not understand what I'm talking about. But she not only talks science, but boy, oh boy, she cuts right to your heart.
I think Jane really speaks from the heart, and therefore she cuts right through your heart. She's authentic. She's genuine. She is not this limelight seeker kind of celebrity, and she is the top celebrity of the environmental movement these days. Jane Goodall speaks for all the other creatures. She speaks for people issues.
Yeah.
She speaks for issues that have to do with the environment, because she understands the interconnectedness of it all. And she approaches it with very simple, basic messaging that has to do with how our hearts respond to the suffering of the others, to the concern. Where is our compassion? She triggers those seeds of goodness that are inside everybody in a very authentic way, because she tells the story of herself, the story of her life as a very humble British young woman who had this incredible dream to go to Africa just at the end of World War II, when she was told, well, as a woman, it will be just impossible. What are you talking about? And her mother was incredibly supportive of her and told her, you will have to work very, very hard, but do pursue your dreams and never give up. And it's when she tells the story of how she actually came to Africa and lived that dream that people get inspired and people get motivated to actually pursue their own dreams.
Well, that's happened. So we were sitting at a table last night. By the way, our phone number, 312-981-7200. And yes, I'm getting questions about that Jane Goodall interview that I did yesterday. We are going to air it right here on WGN. Just wait a couple weeks. That's all. We have to put it all together. So last night I was sitting at a table. A woman said that her daughter met Jane Goodall in a Roots and Shoots program that I'll let you explain in a moment. I don't know how many years ago, because her daughter is now, must have been at the beginning of the program, because her daughter is now 20 years old, working successfully for environmental causes out of Washington, D.C., has stayed in touch with Jane Goodall. They've become friends, and her daughter has made a difference for the environment, and in this particular case, working for the U.S. government, doing some amazing things that I couldn't even exactly repeat, but all at the end of it, my gosh, you must be proud of your daughter. And she said, of course I am. But if she didn't get involved in Roots and Shoots, then this never would have happened. What's more, she said, now my daughter is influencing other young people.
In 1991, Jane was surrounded by 12 Tanzanian young pupils, and they just were despaired. They said, there's nothing we can do about the environment that the adults have messed up. And she thought, I need to give hope to this next generation. And that's when the Roots and Shoots movement started. It's a movement, it's a grassroots movement, really, of empowering young people to look for their own solutions for the problems that they find in their communities and then act. It's about really making them trust in that every individual matters, in that every action that you do, every decision you make in your day-to-day lives can be either part of the solution or part of the problem. And that's how the Roots and Shoots philosophy started with almost 30 years ago. And now Roots and Shoots groups are present in about 50 countries, certainly more than 150,000 or so groups all over. In the States, there are in 50 states, Roots and Shoots groups, more than 14,500 kids last year, over 30,000 community service projects. It's really extraordinary. And what I love about it is that although the Jane Goodall Institute provides the tools to teachers and parents and other multipliers to really start creating these groups, they are self-replicating. Kids talk to other kids. The resources are online. Anyone can create the Roots and Shoots groups. And we are seeing Roots and Shoots in countries where we don't have, as a Jane Goodall Institute, any presences, like Burundi or Colombia. There are great Roots and Shoots groups in China. That's really the greatest presence of Jane's footprint is around Roots and Shoots.
Yeah, and you would necessarily think China, and I talked about that with her as well. So the Jane Goodall Institute, it turns out, is more than just about chimpanzees, but it's about that too. So Carlos is the executive director. We talked a little bit about it because we talked about Roots and Shoots. But what else is the Jane Goodall Institute about?
Really, it started with Jane's connection to some individual chimpanzees when she started her research in 1960 in Gombe National Park in Tanzania, in this forest way out the lake shores of Lake Tanganyika. And she connected with them as individuals. She gave them names in order to be able to tell them apart. And
which at the time was thought scientists weren't supposed to do that. And what she's told me on more than one occasion is that all comes from something you'd understand, Steve. And that is, I understood growing up with a dog that my dog was certainly not the same as other dogs on the block. Of course, individuals have their individual personalities, individual people, individual dogs and cats, individual pigs and rats, for that matter, and certainly our closest relative, the individual chimpanzees.
Fascinating that something that is so obvious for the pet owners community, and you may be walking your dog just now as you listen to this program, was not obvious at all to the scientists. And they were fighting the notion of animals having all those traits and mind and emotions that we know are just so inherent in the personalities of our beloved companion animals. So she connected with them as individuals, and she found out about them making tools, their personalities, as I say, their complicated social networks. And then she started to expand basically her circle of compassion to include those chimpanzees that she was not studying. Those chimpanzees that don't have a name, those chimpanzees that are scattered throughout the Congo Basin and their habitat is being compromised by encroachment. And then she became a conservationist, essentially, at a species level. But that circle of compassion then continued to grow to encompass all chimpanzees on the planet. And you may be surprised, but they don't live just in Africa. They are everywhere on the planet because they are kept as pets and abused in the entertainment industry or in medical laboratories. And that is really a serious problem affecting thousands of chimps. So all of a sudden her concern grows planetary.
And that all happened in Chicago, actually, when she...
It was this conference in 1986. Yes. You're spot on, Steve.
Paul Heltney at the Academy of Sciences. I probably was at that conference. I don't even know. So long ago. But yes, I knew Paul, and I was aware that it all happened here, you know. And you mentioned chimpanzees in captivity. I mean, we wouldn't think about that, but it's illegal. Chimpanzees are still kept that way, not only in the United States, but around the world, which is astounding to me.
Yes, and the issue is we really don't have an idea about where they are and how many there are. We know the problem is rampant. People keep them as pets. They are lovely when they are babies, and all of a sudden they grow up, and then you have a male full of testosterone that you cannot really control.
Who's 100 times stronger than any of us.
It's incredible. So we have all these issues with accidents of chimpanzees mauling their owners and all of that. Luckily for them, there is an outlook out there because there are these incredible sanctuaries that take good care of the chimpanzees these days. Similarly, the chimpanzees of the National Institute of Health, for example, are now retiring in a huge sanctuary called Chim Haven.
And the Jane Goodall Institute was behind that.
This was Jane, incredibly, how she really managed to get into that community. She was accepted. This is the thing about Jane. She is non-confrontational. She really wants to listen to the other side as well and to listen with empathy and with compassion. She understands that none of the keepers of chimpanzees in medical laboratories are bad people. There is no such thing. There are all series of beliefs behind what people do, and you cannot just blame them as bad people for doing what they do. But then she brought them along this journey of trying to understand, is there really any merit to the research that is being done on these chimpanzees? And the issue became a scientific question. Mm-hmm. And there was this incredibly thorough study of all the publications that had been made on chimpanzees' contributions to the understanding of humans and potentially for medical benefit to humans, and there was just nothing that could be found in those studies that could actually be of value to us without having gone through the chimpanzee research.
Yeah, now it's all changed as a result of that. Carlos, I want to find out about you, how you got involved with the Jane Goodall Institute. I have text to get to as well. 6:50, 10 minutes before 7. 720 WGN. WGN Radio, Steve Dale here with the executive director of the Jane Goodall Institute. And Carlos, first of all, people are asking how to reach Jane Goodall. We'll have her on the show in a couple of weeks. And of course, there's a Facebook page and all of that, right?
JaneGoodall.org.
Yep, easy enough. Now, how did you get involved with chimpanzees?
Well,
what's
look,
your background?
In 1990, I was doing research on baboon behavior in Tanzania. I'm a biologist. I ended up going to Gombe National Park. And on the last day of my research, I said, this is a day for photographs. So I went up to the chimpanzees and I was there doing my photographs when all of a sudden I see this huge male chimpanzee run through the brushes and then turn around and start running towards me. And then I thought, well, who is he going to attack? Probably a chimpanzee behind me, but there was nobody. And this chimpanzee was called Frodo. And Frodo was known to beat up particularly white male tourists or researchers. He loved to do that. And so that's what he did. He leapt and then with his legs on my chest, threw me down on the floor, was going to break my ribs. I rolled over to the side and then he started coming again and then breathing into my ear. And I know these images of chimpanzee warfare and Jane has written about it where they bite into each other's skull and kill communities. And I thought, this is my moment. It's entirely up to Frodo what happens next. And then he started just hitting my head with his knuckles. And he did that 14 times, but then something extraordinary happened.
14?
Yes.
You know it was 14.
And I was counting. And then he started grooming me and grooming my head in a gesture of apology. He said, come on, I didn't mean to. It's enough. You don't have to be terrified. This is what we do between males. And then he walked away. And this moment of compassion towards me really took me, because I had a feeling that I need to give back. I need to really, where is my compassion towards these fellow creatures who need our voices to defend them from the threats they are facing? And that turned me into a conservationist. That goes 30 years back.
Well, Jane Goodall is now a messenger of peace. She has been for the United Nations, and about time she's up for a Nobel Peace Prize. I wrote a blog post with a link to the petition that's out there that people can sign. Is there anything else that people can do to help if they feel like I do? Like, it's about time, you should have done this. And the thing about it is that it would give all of you a greater platform.
I think signing on to the petition is a good thing. And if you Google the petition, you will find it easily. I think what's more important really at this point is for everybody to embrace the notion that my contributions in these everyday choices that I make as a consumer matter. And that it all adds up. That day that you decide to walk instead of driving the car, that purchase of this product in the supermarket that you know is sustainable as opposed to the ones that are not, all that matters, all that adds up to this incredibly positive tide of change that not just the Jane Goodall Institute, but the environmental movement needs at this point in time. We all need you.
So the oceans are actually warming up. It's not my opinion, friends. It really is happening. And if you live anywhere, I mean, think about it. If you've been a Chicagoan for your entire life, you know that in the past, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, we haven't had the kind of snow that you might have had as a kid growing up. Yes, we get the snowstorm still, but not as much. I mean, no matter where you are on the planet, and Jane Goodall has been everywhere on the planet, I talked about it with her, I mean, there are changes. And it's global warming isn't quite the right term. Climate change might be a better expression of what's actually going on there. But if we're without our forest, our oceans are changed, doesn't that affect, Carlos, all of us in a way that is really kind of scary if we do not fix this?
Absolutely. And global warming is indeed happening. It's just that climate change is about those extremes that are becoming more extreme and more frequent.
Every year.
More hurricanes, more extreme hurricanes, the storms and so forth. Yes, we're all affected. There's no escaping from this. So we have to all contribute. And I think in politics, we have really an opportunity here. When you vote for the right candidate, when you vote for the non-climate skeptics, basically, for the people who rely on science, we have based our decisions on science for quite some time.
This is the right thing to do. It is. And the crazy thing about the United States is that it has become a political issue. You traveled to Norway. You traveled to Australia, these other places that I've had the honor to be in, a country, you name it, in Africa, wherever it is. It's not an issue. It's like we know it's there. There's nothing political about it. In the United States, it's become political. I don't get it.
But young people are changing that. And young people are around the globe have been rallying and singing songs and making the point to the decision makers that climate change is not just a reality, but this is really a responsibility and we have to fight it.
Website again is?
JaneGoodall.org.
Carlos Drews, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dale.
I'm sure that you know pets aren't like family. They are family, and that's why the folks, like the doctors and staff at MedVet Chicago, are always there when you need them the most. They're located at the corner of Belmont Western and Clybourne. MedVet provides emergency specialty and critical care 24/7. That's the whole idea. Not to mention all those specialists that they have. Veterinary neurologist, veterinary cardiologist, veterinary oncologist. Whatever that specialty is in human medicine, same thing in veterinary medicine. The only difference is that they're all in one building. That's kind of nice. Or, well, two buildings. There's one across the street, but they're right there. 773-281-7110. MedVetForPets.com. 773-281-7110. Just a couple minutes before 7 o'clock, professional painting contractors know the importance of choosing a paint company with quality products and expert service. That's why the best painters in Chicagoland go with PPG Paints. Their high-performance paints allow you to get more out of every project. More coverage, more savings. PPG Paints offers convenient same-day deliveries from 4 a.m. to 8 p.m. to accommodate all your painting needs. Visit ppgpaints.com, ppgpaints.com. Find a store near you. Ask a store associate about helping you on your next project. PPG Paints, the official paints of the National Hockey League. Who knew?